You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And good morning. Happy Thanksgiving weekend, by the way, to
yes,
everybody
indeed.
Out there.
Nothing like a soggy weekend that's going to get to 22 degrees today.
Yeah, I know. What
in
the
Toronto.
Heck is going on?
I know. So confusing.
Yeah. I got a little chore that I'm going to be doing right after the show.
It's not a chore.
It's an obligation, really, that
I
set for myself and yourself. There is a food box set up at our reception desk here.
In support of the Daily Food
That's
Bank.
That's right. Yeah,
Daily Harvest Food
CEO
Bank.
Of the food bank was on Libby Znaimer's Fight Back on Wednesday, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, they brought in a big food bank. Food box. And I'm going to run over.
And there's room in it.
Yeah, yes.
So we're going to fill it.
You got it. Well,
today, you and I.
Uh-oh. I got to call my bank manager. No, I'm going to get a couple of things to put in there along, and I'll get some stuff for you, too.
Yeah, well, I'm doing my other things.
Yeah,
here.
You've got some recording to do.
Do.
But anyway, here we are on a Thanksgiving weekend.
Hey, let's just do a little update on that phenomenal party that Frank and Shirley hosted last Sunday at their place out in the country.
Yes.
The Cabin in the Woods. It was so much fun.
Well,
and it was so well organized. And it was just, food was great. Music was great. The whole thing was just
hats off.
Super time.
The music to Malcolm Edwards and his pal Francis, who provided the music of the evening. And it was just great. But we had a marvelous time.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming.
It was such a pleasure. I didn't want to leave.
Well, we were afraid you weren't going to. Well, no, I should say that. Golly, let me get the phone numbers on the air here for The Garden Show.
Yes.
I've got to mention what the heck we're doing here.
Yes.
In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. Then anywhere else in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, gosh, let Sebastian know, our operator, and he'll pass that along to me. And just before you get the air, you're going to get your garden wings.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, first-time callers.
You will earn your wings by making that call.
Yeah.
Speaking of The Garden Show, if you want to hear more about gardening and fall winter garden tips, I'll be doing a special guest appearance with Bob Kosick on Monday, Thanksgiving Monday.
Oh, great.
Right around the noon hour, shortly after noon. A few minutes of just things that I'm going to be doing in my garden and keeping people tuned into, just doing the regular maintenance, spring and fall. There's certain things we just have to do in order to really have successful gardens and safe gardens as well.
Okay, maybe we can touch on a bit of that.
Maybe. Little teasers.
Wend our way through this first day of the long holiday weekend. Wow.
Yes.
It's going to be, it's always the think of the families who are gathered around and
big travel weekend.
Yeah. And so please be careful on the road. It's going to be very busy. People going from, grandma and grandpa's to wherever. So, take it cool, huh?
That's right. Well, one announcement to make also, Riverdale Horticultural Society is hosting a meeting on Wednesday, October 10th with a flower show and special guest Darren Heimbecker. He's the musician, storyteller, and landscape designer who created Whistling Gardens, which is just outside Wilsonville. The Riverdale Hort meets at 7 o'clock in the Frankland Community Center, which is at 816 Logan Avenue, just south of the Danforth.
Okay, there we are.
Okay.
And we'll be busy with the rest of our show and, of course, the callers.
And the emails, they're piling up here, baby. We're going to have to share some of these emails at some point.
Have to deal with some of that, you're right. Monica, out there in Oakville, we're coming at you in just a couple of moments. Okay, stay tuned to The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's take a little trip out to Oakville and have a word with Monica. Hi, Monica. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
As a nature lover, I wanted to share with you a couple of observations and see if perhaps you can give me some answers as to why things are happening a little differently out there this year.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I do a lot of walking around the nature trails in the area, and we're blessed with a lot of beautiful black walnut trees as well as chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this year, the traditional black walnuts all over the trails has simply not happened. There aren't any whatsoever. And the same is true of the chestnuts. In fact, the chestnuts seem to have a some sort of a blight with their leaves. They're brown and curled at the edges. And
that actually happens pretty much every summer, but it's really obvious this year. It's called chestnut scorch. It's a syndrome, I guess is what it would be. It happens at the end of the summer, and it's really from the sun, the heat in the sun.
So would that contribute to the lack of fruit on the trees?
No. What would contribute to lack of fruit would be lack of flowering back in the spring. And so what we find with so often with plants that are fruit-bearing, and in this case, like the fruit that are nuts, take a ton of energy to create, is that they do tend to be cyclical. So I'm not 100% sure, but I would think that likely the black walnuts and chestnuts bore very heavily last year and are bearing virtually nothing this year.
Well, that could well be.
There's a butternut.
I guess that's why I notice it so much. Now, I'm wondering if this is perhaps a link to lack of bees, or on the other hand, all of a sudden the squirrels are very, very aggressive this year. Is it because they're not getting any black walnuts? Because they eat them like crazy.
Well, I was going to say that I have a butternut in my neighborhood, and the squirrels just rape and pillage this tree. And my backyard is full of butternut debris right now because it has borne a lot of fruit, and all the casings
and
the husks.
You
could break your leg stepping into my backyard because there's so much junk on the patio from the squirrels dropping all the butternut stuff.
Yeah.
So, you're right. The squirrels are definitely looking to, dig and hide whatever they can. They're all about preparing for winter. So
they've been making a real mess of all my planters on my patio, looking for things or burying things that are not there.
So I just wondered
if it was because they were frustrated by the lack of black walnuts.
Well, no, they could be burying things that are there. Like, you're just not necessarily seeing what they're burying. But yes, indeed, they are making a real mess. I mean, if you are concerned, you can always get the old corn cob. You know, they get sort of corn, dried corn, which is a great squirrel food. They have to sort of gnaw away at that, or peanuts. But mind you, they're probably going to just bury them all in your planters anyway. So, there's
that. Well, I go out every morning and I put all the dirt back in the planter.
Yeah, me too.
And then they do that same thing again.
And the plants go flying.
Yeah.
I know, they're a little... I'm thinking chicken wire next year on top of the planters as I'm planting.
But so you don't think it has anything to do with lack of bees, lack of fruit, and so forth?
No, typically. I mean, we have had some very interesting growing seasons the last few years. And certainly this year has actually been a pretty good one. We had lots of heat, but we had lots of moisture with that heat. The year before, like last 2017, it was extremely long, cold, drawn-out spring. And then it just continued to be a very, very moist and cool summer, to the point where the leaves didn't even drop. We never had a proper frost, so everything could go to sleep. So no real proper dormancy set in. And so there's a lot of impact on trees from what happened in 2017 in terms of all that moisture, a lot of cracking bark, because so much moisture was still in the above ground plant parts when it did get cold in January. So every season's a new season, and everything impacts everything.
So you're thinking that the next year we're going to see our black walnuts back?
I think so,
Well, that's
let us know for sure. Okay.
Thank you, Monica. A couple of interesting observations there as we get rolling along in this Saturday morning, which is coming up kind of cloudy right now. And boy, was
kind
it rainy.
Kind of wet, yeah.
Ooh, man, a ton of rain has fallen already today.
Yeah, but it's going to clear up.
Yep.
The sun is going to come out and it's going to be 22 degrees.
Unbelievable.
Silly.
Mm-hmm. Christine. Up in Ottawa. Hey, good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Christine.
I love your program. I just think you're brilliant.
Thank you.
Charlie, I have a question for you. I have a 4-foot Alberta spruce on my balcony.
Oh, my.
Do I take care of it in winter?
Is it brand new?
Brand new.
What direction does your balcony face?
Oh, God. Oh, shoot.
Do you see the sun in the morning or in the afternoon or at all?
Afternoon.
Okay. So you're probably facing west.
Right.
Is it a pretty windy balcony, or do you have like a solid barricade on the wall, the, you know, the
hand? It's very high up. It's a penthouse, yeah. So it's like 22 floors up.
Oh, my. So you probably do have a fair amount of wind then.
Yes, exactly.
Do you have any friends on the lower levels?
No, nobody, Charlie.
Could you sneak that? Oh, 4 foot's pretty big. Because I was going to say, could you sneak that plant down and tuck it into the garden down at ground level just for the winter? Like, leave it in its...
Oh, I see. Okay. You mean a garage?
Well, you leave it in its pot, of course.
Yes.
The garage is probably going to be too warm. What you need is a spot that is still outside, but protected from all that cold wind, that northwest wind.
Yes.
So if there's some little corner maybe around an existing garden or in a garden where you could actually place the pot, in a best case you'd actually bury the pot just under the ground in outside underground, and it would have a very high chance of survival. I'm afraid...
Charlie, I can't leave it inside.
No, it wants to be... It's an evergreen, and it's...
Right.
It wants to be outside. It will drop all its needles and shrivel up and die inside.
Yeah. So, Charlie, what is your best advice?
Keep it outside. Just try and find a spot where it's out of extreme wind, which will cause it to dry up and die. So, get it...
up, Charlie?
Pardon?
Cover it up with a sackcloth or something?
Yeah, a burlap would help. And water. You're going to have to water every month with just room temperature water throughout the entire winter.
Okay, thank you,
okay.
Charlie.
All right. You're welcome.
So thank good.
You. Thank you, Christine. Calling from Ottawa.
That's
with
a challenging one.
A lot warmer air up there. Hot air, you might
22
say.
22 floors in Ottawa. Facing west is
a chilly
environment.
For an
evergreen. Because the evergreen, we call that desiccation. It's a form of dehydration. Just can't cope with all that sun and wind, etc.
Okay.
So hopefully... Christine, let us know how this works out next March or April.
All right. I'm looking up at our monitor. We have several calls waiting on us, so we must take a little bit of a break here on The Garden Show, and then we'll be back to get out to Burlington to say hi to Nancy next up here on The Garden Show with, am I right? somebody disappeared there.
Yeah,
okay.
Nancy.
A first-time caller, Larry.
Oh, get your
from
arm
North
going.
York. All right. I'll get my bell ready in just a moment.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty, Charlie, here comes the bell.
Woo!
Whoa, already.
Welcome.
That is for Larry in North York. First time
caller.
Hello,
and good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Charlie, I heard you maybe 100, maybe 1,000 times. I didn't have time to talk to you because it was busy.
I know.
Shortly, I am not very successful in how to winterize some plants,
okay,
particularly dahlia flower,
mm-hmm,
gladiole flower,
mm-hmm,
and stevia. I am probably 4 or 5 of these roots are dead at springtime. 4 or 5 of them are growing.
Oh.
What I do wrong? Do you want to see or hear how I preserve them?
Well, let me... So, dahlia, gladiola, and what was it? Was it clivia? What was the third one?
Stevia, natural sweetener.
Gotcha. Okay. So here, let me tell you what I would do, since you've got 3 questions really going on there. So, dahlia and glads are both examples of tender... they're not really tubers, but they're plants that grow in the summer in our gardens, but will die if we leave them out all winter, but will go dormant if they're allowed to get a first frost. So let the dahlia and the glads get frosted. The top growth will shrivel up and die. You must dig them up with a fork, careful not to damage them at all at that time, and dry both of them just on some newspaper in the garage or on a porch, not inside, just cool, dry spot. Give them a couple days, and then you shake the soil off as much as you can. They are both stored exactly opposite to each other. Gladiola are stored dry, so you get an old pair of pantyhose or an onion bag, something like that. Gently place the gladiola corms into those bags, hang them up somewhere in the dark. Doesn't need to be cool, just needs to be dark and dry. Hang them up, forget about them. The dahlia, on the other hand, need to be stored moist. So you get some fresh potting soil or peat moss that's never been used before, moisten it, bury the dahlias in the, after you sort of clean some of that mud off and cleaned up the foliage, the dahlia tubers go down under that moist peat moss or potting soil, whatever the case may be, which keeps them in the dark, because we need them dark, otherwise they'll grow, and you just leave them alone for the winter. Every now and then check, make sure there's enough moisture to keep them alive, but not too much moisture that they start to rot. And then round about March or April, we pull them out of the dark there, pot them up into pots, and the dahlias will start to grow in pots inside, hold the glads, take them outside once we're almost frost-free, so May sometime. And stevia, I would just treat as a tropical plant, as a houseplant. Don't try and make it go dormant. Bring it in the fall before frost. Trim it back, get it in a sunny location, and enjoy it as a houseplant on your window ledge, nipping little bits now and then to put into your tea or whatever you're hoping to sweeten with the stevia.
There you go. Larry,
that's a long answer.
gives me an opportunity to plug the podcasts, which we have here. If you want to hear all of that again, Larry.
And slow it down.
Yeah, slow it down a little bit. By all means, check out, and maybe by Wednesday we'll have the podcast of today's show up and running on our website. And just go to AM740, the main page. It'll direct you to the podcasts. Then you go to which week you want to... You can
the
listen
garden
to
show.
Years.
There's several podcasts. Go to the garden show and pick any show you want.
That's right. And you can re-listen to it and be able to follow along maybe a little more closely because there's a heck of a lot of information there. Okay, Larry?
Thanks for calling, though.
Yeah,
don't
very good.
Be a stranger.
First time caller.
Yeah.
I love it. Hal in Kitchener is next up here. Good morning, Hal.
Well, good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
I have a question on lupins.
Mm-hmm.
I've had lupins for... many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And last year they did extremely well. I get maybe 100, I'm exaggerating, 50 to 60 flower shoots or whatever you call them, stalks.
Yeah.
I've got all kinds of plants all over the place, front, back, side, the house. And they do extremely well. Last year they did well.
Mm-hmm.
This year they didn't do hardly anything. I had maybe 8 or 10 plants.
Well, like you're saying, blooming.
Flower stalk.
There could have been some young plants that weren't yet blooming mixed in amongst your other garden plants. Because partly what the lupins are doing, is they are growing from seed, because there is seed being broadcast.
Yes.
During that growing season and towards the end.
Yeah.
But also...
usually the plants died down after they seed.
Yeah.
They shrivel up.
Yeah.
This year... they look like they're just starting in spring. They're beautiful. They're sending up new shoots, all kinds of stuff. The plants are beautiful right now all the plants, front, back, side.
I know, and this is so, Hal, your question is very consistent with our first caller, Monica, calling from Oakville, who was wondering about, the lack of black walnuts this year, and the squirrels are, wreaking havoc.
I got two chestnut trees, too, and my squirrels went wild.
But did you have chestnuts on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tons of them.
Right. So you see, that's where Monica might have missed the fact that the walnuts and chestnuts were there, but they're raped and pillaged now by the squirrels, and she missed the fact. So
I like lupins, and I just wonder what the heck happened, and why are they now starting to look like they're going to produce?
Well, because they're confused, and I don't blame them for being confused.
The weather's changing and all that stuff. It's not like down east anymore where I got them from.
Well, it's not that long ago that I remember summer was hot and fall was cool and winter was cold, and it kind of moved like that. Now, I just find that we're doing these, like today is 22 degrees.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And tomorrow is something else. And it totally confuses the plants, not to mention the insects. Think of the bees. They should be fast asleep or going to sleep at this point.
I might have some flowers yet this year.
Buzzing around.
It looks like there's flowers coming.
Yes, you may. Exactly. That's what's going to happen. If it stays mild, or if we do maintain some mild temperature. temperatures. Yeah. So don't give up, obviously, because what happened?
I won't. I love bluefin.
Yeah, and remember what happened last year, just with all that rain and cool in 2017, and then it got very cold in January, and we really didn't have any snow cover. So yeah. You know that some seeds probably were destroyed in January when that very cold snap happened.
I collect hundreds and hundreds of seeds all over the place. When I go east, I collect
seeds. Oh, nice, yeah.
Mm. We have a garden here, a city garden area where they have lupins, and I'm allowed to go in and collect seeds from there.
Oh, good. Oh, you're a lupin guy.
Permission.
That's
good. I've
got
probably 500 seeds here at home now.
Nice. Well, that's good that you're able to grow them, because I find lupins a little challenging. They want sun. They want well-drained soils. They want a whole bunch of things that sometimes it's hard to give them. So good for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Hal.
Yeah, and indeed.
Again, report back. I need to know how this all unfolds.
Exactly. You want to get the end of the story, too.
Yeah.
Exactly. We've got a couple of lines open right now. In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. And anywhere in the province, of course, it is toll-free, 740-4740.
Yeah, here, if you can read it upside down.
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, gee whiz. Sometimes the old noggin just doesn't operate properly.
It's mouth-brain connection.
That's
right. It's like hand-eye coordination.
Hey, Rosalie in Hamilton. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
Good morning.
Good. I have a question. We have a lavender plant, and there had been moved, so we had put it in a pot to take it with us. Mm-hmm. So it's in a pot now, and we took it in the house because that one night was going to be really cold. I wasn't sure if it was going to survive or not. So I'm just wondering, how do I keep it so that we'll have it next year?
Okay, so did you say you're actually moving your home? Or?
No, we had
moved. Oh, okay. So it's come with you.
You're in we put in a big pot.
Sure.
And it's bloomed.
Yep. It should not be inside your home if you want it to survive the winter. It is a plant. Well, assuming that it is a perennial lavender, you don't know what lavender it is. Is there a tag on it?
No, there's not. I know, last year in the winter it sort of died down and then it came back in the spring.
Okay, so you've had it for a couple of years. So chances are it's what we would call, it's either Munstead or one of the hardier lavenders. So what are you going to do? You need to get it outside. It's in a large pot, you say. Is there any possibility you could remove it from the pot and put it in the ground before winter? Or you want to keep it in the pot?
Well, the thing is, we don't have a place to put it in the ground because we have places where there's bulbs. So when we try to dig to put something in the ground, we end up all our bulbs. So.
Okay.
So
it is, remember, colder above ground than it is in the ground when it comes to potted plants.
Okay.
So the roots are better insulated when they're down underground and have a higher chance of survival because of that.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons I'm just wondering if you could get it in the ground. If you can't get it in the ground, you don't have space, or it's just not ever going to go in the ground, find a spot on your property that is protected from the northwest wind. So look to the southeast quadrant as a little corner you can tuck that pot into.
Okay.
You don't particularly want a lot of sun beating down on it, but you definitely don't want a lot of wind beating away at it either.
Okay.
If possible, depending on what kind of pot it's in, look for ways that you could insulate around the pot, whether it's a couple of straw bales or old blankets or burlap or, bags of leaves. Sometimes I'll just do green garbage bags filled with leaves around a pot, just because you're just trying to protect those roots from freezing solid and dying.
Okay.
Make sure also that the plant has been well watered as we do get into freeze up. So that's still obviously a few weeks, if not months from now.
We hope.
Yeah. And it's just, there's so little consistency to our winters. I mean, if we lived in Collingwood, we would say, okay, we know we've got snow coming. We know we've got that insulating blanket coming. Mm-hmm. But in Toronto, we don't know that. Mm-hmm. We might get snow. We might get rain. We might get ice. We might get 22 degrees in December. Like, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want the plant to go dormant, and you want it to stay dormant, and you want it to not be subjected to extreme cold, is the bottom line.
So the best thing would be to try to find a spot and dig it into the ground.
That would be the best
survival.
Yeah,
if that's not a possibility, just protect it in the southeast corner with something around it.
Okay. That's right.
Okay. All right.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I hope so, because we had one once before, and we had moved it, but it just didn't take.
Yeah, it is a bit challenging to keep things like lavender, because lavender is borderline hardy. It's a zone 5 plant. You're in Hamilton, you're probably 5 or 6 where you live. So, yes. Give us a call in the spring. Let us know whether that made it or not.
And
okay,
I've got to check.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Rosalie, I've got to check my music sheets for later this afternoon. There's a wonderful little tune by Michael Terry called Rosalie.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there
I might be able to play that for you. Okay. Thanks for joining us here in the morning show with the, or at least the Garden Show.
Yeah, right.
He got.
Oh, you've been doing other shows.
I'm doing the other show already, aren't I? Yeah. In Toronto, Cindy is on the line. Good morning, Cindy. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. My mom just passed, so I'm living in her home now, mm-hmm. and I have an umbrella tree mm-hmm. that usually gets cut back, but because she was so ill, we just didn't get enough chance to cut it all back. Mm-hmm. And then the birds started nesting, and now it's this huge ball. My mom always kept it cut back, but I don't know. I still hear a bird in there.
Huh. But wait, help me understand what's an umbrella tree. So this is something outside.
It is, and it's got it when it.
Oh,
when it didn't have the shoots going, right. It's just like a great big ball.
And are the leaves heart-shaped?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a catalpa.
It's what?
C-A-T, like cat.
Cat.
A-L.
Yeah.
P as in Paul, A. Catalpa.
Okay,
and you're right. We often do prune it back very hard in the spring so that it just looks like a little popsicle with all these little knobby...
Exactly.
Top on it, and then it grows 4 feet over the growing season with these massive heart-shaped leaves, and you know, looks nice, and it's can be a very ornamental plant. So it hasn't been trimmed in a couple of years, it sounds like.
Not since last year, last season.
Is it a problem? Like, is it going to interfere with cars getting in or out of the driveway?
Well, the man who helps me, he did cut a bit, just a little bit off the sides, because... Excuse me. I was worried about birds.
Okay.
And there was a lot of them. It was great. That was lovely.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what are you worried that the bird...
Oh, I don't know when to cut it back.
The best time is early in the spring. A really, really hard pruning. If, for whatever reason, you needed to cut it back now, like I say, because it was interfering with getting in and out of the property or the front door.
Yeah, we're okay.
Yeah, you could do that now, but I would leave it if you can, particularly if you've got some birds nesting in there. Let them do their thing. Now, some birds do actually nest late, so it is possible that there are, like I've seen, you know, baby blue jays come out in like August and September, so, you know, who knows who's nesting in there. I'd leave it alone if I were you, if you can. And
yeah,
then it's
I will.
Very hard pruning. Like, all that 4 or 5 or 6 feet of growth comes right back to the main stem.
So up to about a third you could take
off?
More
than a third.
More than
It's all those branches. So it's the funniest looking plant in the spring. It's just a stem.
Yeah, it's bald.
Yeah. And it's bald. It's just got this knobby top on it. And you're like, whoa, that doesn't look very nice. But very quickly, it will all become green. So,
good stuff.
And of course, remember, in the spring, we fertilize as well and make sure that there's no competition with a lawn around the bottom. There's no weeds. Etc. So, you know, caring for the plant will also be a good thing.
Excellent.
Okay. Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you for being part of the Garden Show here on this Saturday morning. And we're going to take a little break right here and come back and have a chat with Eleanor calling in from Milton here on Zoomer Radio as we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village. It's back to the Garden Show. And as I mentioned, from Milton, here is Eleanor on the line. Good morning, Eleanor.
Morning. I tried my hand at growing vegetables this year, and my beets came up beautifully.
Uh-huh.
But they, when you cut into them, there's like a thread, like a piece of wood or a root growing through the middle. And you couldn't even bite it. I mean, you have to cut them, and then you pull the thread, piece of
woodiness
out of the middle.
Huh.
And the other thing, I planted parsnips twice, and the second time, only 3 seeds came up.
Oh, okay. So one of the things I find that works well with both parsnips and beets is I will soak the seeds overnight, just in room temperature water, a little bowl of water,
Oh, okay.
Yeah, drop the seeds in there, let them sit all night. In the morning, drain the water out of the little bowl and go out there and plant the what will be wet seeds into moist earth. And, of course, water thoroughly after planting. And that will you'll increase your germination rate by doing that.
Oh.
Now, why the beets ended up so woody, how big are the beets when you're harvesting them? How many inches across are they, the beets?
Inches across.
Well, the beets when you're harvesting them, how big are they?
Harvesting. Oh, they're quite close together. I pulled them, I kind of thinned them a bit, but they are pretty close together.
Yes. That could be part of why they ended up so, what we would call woody. When you have when your root crops end up woody, it's because, as you notice, if they're too close together, they're running into each other and they're lacking for moisture and nutrient because they're all fighting for the same moisture and nutrient. And so sometimes you will get a really tough tasting root vegetable. Carrots the same if they're too close together. So you really do need to be careful when you plant. You know, we want to plant
in the middle. You pull this kind of thread out of the middle, and they're beautiful.
Oh, good. Well, where did you get the seeds from?
At my nursery over here at Crawford's.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, you might want to just keep track of what that variety was that you grew, because it'll have you on the package, the seed package, what exactly you grew in the terms of the beets.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And avoid that variety next year and try a different one, or speak to the people at the garden center and tell them your experience that you're looking...
Ask different people, and nobody can tell me what happened.
No, just so you're looking...
I'm going to phone in you and see if you've heard of this.
I would say it's probably variety-specific, not to mention... the stress that the plants were under being so close together. So do thin.
Okay, thank you very much.
During the season.
You're welcome, Eleanor. Thank you for joining us here on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
Yeah.
And, well, let's go a little bit to the east, a little bit to the north. There's Lindsay, Ontario, where Sandra is. Hi, Sandra.
Hi.
Good morning.
I just wondered how I can protect my bulbs when I plant them.
Oh, it's like tulips.
From the squirrels.
Tulips and daffodils, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so one of the things I find works really well is don't let the squirrels see you planting the bulbs. You've got to distract them. If they see you plant them, they will come right in behind you and dig them all up. So get yourself a bag of peanuts or something. Go to the other side of the house. Sprinkle those peanuts. Keep the squirrels busy. Race around to the other side of the house. Get those bulbs in really quick. And don't let it look like you just planted something. Because squirrels are very, very curious, right? So you've got to, after you've planted the bulbs, you know, throw some leaves on top, throw a few branches on top. Don't make it look all clean and tidy like something fresh just went in the ground. Cover that fresh earth with what debris is around. And that will mess them up a bit. There are obviously other, you know, mechanical things. You can put chicken wire down as you're planting under the soil, which will keep them from digging them up. There are different sprays, one of which is called Plant Skid, S-K-Y-D-D, D as in dog, which you can spray to keep the squirrels away. Yeah. So there's a few things. There's those plastic forks from the dollar store buried down with the tines underground, but stopping the squirrels from being able to dig. Rose canes laid on top of the surface slows them down. I mean, there's certain things you can do just to slow them. Cayenne pepper some people will use, which washes away very quickly in the rain. Lots and lots of things. But I find distractions the best. If you distract them, they won't know that you planted them.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Sandra.
And honestly, back when Barack Obama was in the White House, I don't know if they still do this, but traditionally the White House has always planted like millions of spring bulbs every fall. And in their budget is 10% for the squirrels. So that right away, it's part of the plan.
Write that off.
Yeah, you just know whatever you're doing, the squirrels are taking some of them. So make that part of the plan.
I am always, when you talk about this and those little beggars, I can just picture one of the squirrels with a pair of binoculars, you know.
Exactly.
Looking, hey, look, hey, Madge,
yeah.
She's at it again.
The network, yeah exactly.
That's right.
On the computer. All right, I'm seeing in quadrant A4, we've got some daffodils going in. I can see 47 over there in that corner. Yeah, and before you know,
boom.
All in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just got to, like, don't let them see you.
Okay. All right. Forewarned is forearmed, as they say. We have to take a break here, and we'll be back to say hi to June in Coburg here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, let's get out to Coburg. Charlie, there's June. Good morning, June. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good morning.
My question is about rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
My rhubarb looks great now. It looks better than it has all summer. It's got beautiful green leaves and it's tall. What do I do with it now? Is the season over for rhubarb?
Well, again, it's interesting how many callers we're hearing today that are going, how come it's like spring out there?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know why? It's just because we've had such mild weather. Mild weather, lots of rain. The plants are just as confused as you are. They don't really know that it's October. As far as they're concerned, it's feeling kind of like June. So they're acting like it. So, I mean, you could harvest, I mean, some of those younger stalks, and I'm sure you'd find they'd be quite tasty and delicious if, you know. Normally they're kind of tired by now, but we've seen lots of new growth with the warm temperatures and that really, you know, good sort of solid, consistent rain in the last 6 weeks has been excellent. I mean, look how green the lawns are. Normally they're not nearly this green in October. So that tells you we've had lots of rain and good weather. So yeah, help yourself to some late rhubarb. Why not?
Okay, and then for the winter, do I just pull the whatever stalks are left and... That's it?
Yeah, or just leave them alone. You know what? They'll just drop in the frost, and they will decompose into the soil and add nutrient back around the plant. Whatever debris is there in the spring, you can clean up. But I'm a pretty lazy gardener when it comes to letting things just drop in the frost and decompose on site.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty,
June.
Thank
you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. Before we go to our next caller, you've got an email that you want to deal with,
well,
Charlie.
Well, I do, because last week we got a call from Nancy. She was in Burlington, and she was talking about some invasive roots that were growing in her lawn and her gardens and killing everything, but no idea what those might be. So it's a little bit of a challenge to try and figure out what those invading roots might be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to our listener and email from Brenda, who said that she did hear the call, and she said she had a problem along those same lines in her own yard. Mm-hmm. She called an arborist into her back garden last year, and the arborist identified the black locusts, which is a native tree, very, very fast-growing native tree, was not in her backyard, but it was in the neighbor's backyard, and those roots were coming and causing some problems in her yard just because they're such vigorous roots.
Mm-hmm.
So he suggested that perhaps she use some, if she wanted to, because little suckers and little locust trees were coming up everywhere, that perhaps she wanted to use some Roundup to destroy those locusts from taking over her own garden. And of course, she said apparently the property behind where Brenda lives was once an orchard, and black locust was planted as a windbreak around the orchard. And meanwhile, the property was abandoned for future development, but has turned from a field to a forest in a very short time because these locusts have just taken over.
Right.
Like imagine the orchard plants might even still be there in amongst the locusts. So just a thought, Nancy, that look out beyond your, you know, perimeter. Look to see what's out beyond you, what's in the neighbors. Perhaps there is some abandoned space around you, or speak to some of the people who might have lived there longer than you have, just to try and get a sense of where these roots could be coming from. And then we're in a better position to handle getting rid of them. All right.
Absolutely great.
Thank you very much, Brenda.
All righty. Let's see if we can squeeze another call in. Sure.
One.
From Hagersville, Ontario. We looked at the map there.
Yeah.
North and east of Port Dover sort of area.
Yeah.
And good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling regarding my Austrian pines.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1.5 acres severed from the farm beside us.
Mm-hmm.
We planted them about 6 feet inside our property line away from the farm. And everything went well until it was no longer pasture land, was converted to crops.
Mm-hmm.
In this season, the crops were fertilized 2 and 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I noticed my one pine tree right on the very corner was gradually dying off. Later was totally dead. Second tree lost a few branches. I'm kind of wondering if perhaps the fertilizer contact with the roots might be causing the pine trees to die off. My question is, if I built up the soil level along there before I replanted, would I have a better chance replanting Austrian pines?
Well, actually, I would say that likely the fertilizer would not cause the death of the pines, depending on when the fertilizer was applied. So you're right. If these the crop was being fertilized through August, as an example, then that could be detrimental to the pines. But any fertilizer prior to August, and there wouldn't be any fertilizing in October, November, so anything prior to August would actually technically feed the pines. But is it possible, I guess the crop is either like a corn-soybean crop rotation?
It varies.
Yeah.
It was corn for quite a number of years, and I know they do very heavy fertilizing for that.
Yes.
And then the last year or two, they did soybean.
Right, okay. So I'm wondering if they are using herbicide to control the weeds in the crop and that you're getting some herbicide drift onto your pines.
I wouldn't be surprised because we've got mega weeds here.
Right, yeah. Now, there is like Roundup Ready corn, but the soybeans for sure would have been sprayed with even something as simple as, there are things out there that they use on soybeans to control weeds. Mm. And it doesn't hurt soybeans, but hurts everything else. And that could have caused damage to the pines. That would be my thinking.
Okay.
As long as those are cropped, so that's not you cropping, that's somebody else renting that land and cropping on it?
Well, they're the owner of the farm,
okay.
You know.
Yeah. So you were just trying to create a bit of a windbreak or a break?
Yes, exactly. Like these were nice big pine trees, and I'm just wondering, is it worth replanting?
Hard to know what to say there.
Yeah.
What I would do is maybe take some pictures. And can you talk to the owner of the farm and see what the plan is and what their sort of cropping techniques are? And then if you wanted to send me a picture and send me any information that you gain from the farmer regarding fertilizer techniques, herbicide, what they do with their systems, then I could probably give you better suggestions than just sort of off the top of my head.
Sure. And I know this could be a coincidence because if I'm watching the other pine trees along there, they seem to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you are. And Austrian pine are not a super long-lived plant, but we're out of racetrack, as Frank would say. I got to go. The car show gentlemen are revving their motors in the background. And they are going to run me right over very soon. So I'm going to have to get going. Thanks for calling, though, Ann. All righty, Frank.
Well, been a busy show, as usual.
It has. So that was interesting. I did that little live hit last week from the cancer event.
Yes.
That was quite an interesting event going on. So thank you for that. I know appreciated the promotion. It was Sick Children's, my mistake. Mm-hmm. It was a Sick Children's Hospital fundraiser at Fort York. So that was fun.
Well, we're going to have lots of fun today. I'm coming back from 1 to 3:30, and I'm really excited about being part and parcel of the jet that will maybe take you to Jamaica.
Heard
one of our listeners, Dawn,
claimed
last Monday as one of the winners. Well,
so fun.
If you qualify today, you will be in the draw on Monday mornings.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm applying if I could. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Sebastian. Everybody, happy Thanksgiving all around.
Indeed.
See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio. The new AM 740.